Death, pillow slipping gently under his red robe, stood in the middle of the nursery carpet. It was an old one. Things ended up in the nursery when they'd seen a complete tour of duty in the rest of the house. Long ago, someone had made it by carefully knotting long bits of brightly coloured rag into a sacking base, giving it the look of a deflated Rastafarian hedgehog. Things lived among the rags. There were old rusks, bits of toy, buckets of dust. It had seen life. It may even have evolved some. Now the occasional lump of grubby, melting snow dropped onto it. Susan was crimson with anger.
"I mean, why?"
she demanded, walking around the figure.
"This is Hog's Watch. It's supposed to be jolly, with mistletoe and holly and other things ending in ollie. It's a time when people want to feel good about things and eat until they explode. It's a time when they want to see all their relatives—"
She stopped that sentence. "I mean, it's a time when humans are really human," she said, "and they don't want a skeleton at the feast. Especially one, I might add, who's wearing a false beard and has got a damn cushion shoved up his robe. I mean, why?" Death looked nervous.
"Albert said it would help me get into the spirit of the thing. It's good to see you again."
There was a small, squelchy noise. Susan spun round, grateful right now for any distraction.
"Don't think I can't hear you. They're grapes, understand? And the other things are satsumas. Get out of the fruit bowl."
"Can't blame a bird for trying," said the raven sulkily from the table.
"And you leave those nuts alone. They're for tomorrow."
"Squeak!"
said the Death of Rats, swallowing hurriedly. Susan turned back to Death. The Hogfather's artificial stomach was now at groin level.
"This is a nice house," she said, "and this is a good job, and it's real, with normal people, and I was looking forward to a real life where normal things happen, and suddenly the old circus comes to town. Look at yourselves! Three stooges, no waiting. Well, I don't know what's going on, but you can all leave again, right? This is my life. It doesn't belong to any of you. It's not going to—"
There was a muffled curse, a rush of soot, and a skinny old man landed in the grate.
"Bam!" he said. "Good grief!" raged Susan. "And here is Pixie Albert. Well, well, well. Come along in, do. If the real Hogfather doesn't come soon, there's not going to be a room."
"He won't be joining us," said Death.
The pillow slid softly onto the rug.
"Oh, and why not? Both of the children did letters to him," said Susan. "There's rules, you know."
"Yes, there are rules, and they're on the list. I checked it."
Albert pulled the pointy hat off his head and spat out some soot.
"Right, he did. Twice," he said.
"Anything to drink round here?"
"So what have you turned up for?" Susan demanded. "And if it's for business reasons, I will add, then that outfit is in extremely poor taste."
"The Hogfather is unavailable."
"Unavailable? At Hog's Watch?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"He is, let me see, there isn't an entirely appropriate human word, so let's settle for dead. Yes, he is dead."
Susan had never hung up a stocking. She'd never looked for eggs laid by the soul cake duck. She'd never put a tooth under her pillow in the serious expectation that a dentally inclined fairy would turn up. It wasn't that her parents didn't believe in such things. They didn't need to believe in them. They knew they existed. They just wished they didn't. Oh, there had been presents at the right time, with a careful label saying who they were from, and a superb egg on soul cake morning, filled with sweets. Juvenile teeth earned no less than a dollar each from her father, without argument. But it was all straightforward. In fact, when she was 8, she'd found a collection of animal skulls in an attic, relic of some former duke of an inquiring turn of mind. Her father had been a bit preoccupied with affairs of state, and she'd made $27 before being found out. The hippopotamus molar had, with hindsight, been a mistake. Skulls never frightened her, even then. She knew now that they'd been trying to protect her. She hadn't known then that her father had been Death's apprentice for a while, and that her mother was Death's adopted daughter. She'd had very dim recollections of being taken a few times to see someone who'd been quite, well, jolly in a strange, thin way, and the visits had suddenly stopped. and she'd met him later, and yes, he had his good side, and for a while she'd wondered why her parents had been so unfeeling, and she knew now why they'd tried to keep her away. There was far more to genetics than little squirmy spirals. She could walk through walls when she really had to. She could use a tone of voice that was more like actions than words, that somehow reached inside people and operated all the right switches. And her hair. That had only happened recently, though. It used to be unmanageable, but at around the age of 17, she had found it more or less managed itself. That had lost her several young men. Someone's hair rearranging itself into a new style, the tresses curling around themselves like a nest of kittens, could definitely put the crimp on any relationship. She'd been making good progress, though. She could go for days now without feeling anything other than entirely human. But it was always the case, wasn't it? You could go out into the world, succeed on your own terms, and sooner or later, some embarrassing old relative was bound to turn up. Grunting and swearing, the gnome clambered out of another drainpipe, jammed its hat firmly on its head, threw its sack onto a snowdrift, and jumped down after it.
"It's a good one," he said. "Take him weeks to get rid of that one."
He took a crumpled piece of paper out of a pocket and examined it closely. Then he looked at an elderly figure working away quietly at the next house. It was standing by a window, drawing with great concentration on the glass. The gnome wandered up, interested, and watched critically.
"Why just fern patterns?" he said after a while. "Pretty, yeah, but you wouldn't catch me putting a penny in your hat for fern patterns."
The figure turned, brush in hand.
"I happen to like fern patterns," said Jack Frost, coldly.
"It's just that people expect, you know, sad, big-eyed kids, kittens looking out of boots, little doggies, that sort of thing."
"I do ferns."
"Or big pots of sunflowers, happy seaside scenes."
"And ferns."
"I mean, supposing some big high priest wanted you to paint the temple ceiling with gods and angels and such like, what did you do then?"
"He could have as many gods and angels as he liked, provided they
looked like ferns."
"I resent the implication that I am solely fern-fixated," said Jack Frost. "I can also do a very nice paisley pattern."
"What's that look like, then?"
"Well, it does, admittedly, have a certain ferny quality to the uninitiated eye." Frost leaned forward. "Who are you?"
The gnome took a step backwards.
"You're not a tooth fairy, are you? I see more and more of them about these days. Nice girls."
Nah, not teeth," said the gnome, clutching his sack.
"What then?"
The gnome told him.
"Really?" said Jack Frost. "I thought they just turned up."
"Well, come to that, I thought frost on the windows just happened all by itself," said the gnome. "Yeah, you don't half look spiky. I'll bet you go through a lot of bed sheets."
"I don't sleep," said Frost icily, turning away. "And now, if you'll excuse me, I have a large number of windows to do. Ferns aren't easy. You need a steady hand."
"What do you mean, dead?" Susan demanded. "How can the Hogfather be dead? Isn't he what you are? An
anthropomorphic personification? Yes, he has become so. The spirit of Hogswatch."
"But how? How can anyone kill the Hogfather? Poisoned sherry? Spikes in the chimney?"
"There are more subtle ways."
"Cough, cough, cough, cough. Ugh. Oh, dear, this soot," said Albert loudly. "Chokes me up something cruel."
"And you've taken over?" said Susan, ignoring him. "That's sick."
Death contrived to look hurt.
"I'll just go and have a look somewhere," said Albert, brushing past her and opening the door.
She pushed it shut quickly.
"And what are you doing here, Albert?" she said, clutching at the straw. "I thought you'd die if you ever came back to the world."
"Ah, but we are not in the world," said Death. "We are in the special congruent reality created for the Hogfather. Normal rules have to be suspended. How else could anyone get around the entire world in one night?"
"'S right," said Albert, leering. "One of the Hogfather's little helpers, me. Official, got the pointy green hat and everything."
He spotted the glass of sherry and a couple of turnips that the children had left on the table, and bore down on them. Susan looked shocked. A couple of days earlier, she'd taken the children to the Hogfather's grotto in one of the big shops in the mall. Of course, it wasn't the real one, but it had turned out to be a fairly good actor in a red suit. There had been people dressed up as pixies and a picket outside the shop by the Campaign for Equal Heights. The CEH was always ready to fight for the rights of the differently tall and was not put off by the fact that most pixies and gnomes weren't the least bit interested in dressing up in little pointy hats with bells on when there were other far more interesting things to do. All that tinkly-wee stuff was for the old folks back home in the forest. When a tiny man hit Ankh Morpork, he preferred to get drunk, kick some serious ankle, and search for tiny women. In fact, the CEH now had to spend so much time explaining to people that they hadn't got enough rights that they barely had any time left to fight for them. None of the pixies had looked anything like Albert. If they had, people would have only gone into the grotto armed.
"Been good, have you?" said Albert and spat into the fireplace.
Susan stared at him. Death leaned down. She stared up into the blue glow of his eyes.
"You are keeping well," he said.
"Yes."
"Self-reliant, making your own way in the world?"
"Yes."
"Good. Well, come, Albert, we will load the stockings and get on with things."
A couple of letters appeared in Death's hand.
"Someone christened the child Twyla?"
"I'm afraid so, but what—"
"And the other one, Gawain?"
"Yes, but look how—"
"Why Gawain?"
"I suppose it's a good strong name for a fighter."
"A self-fulfilling prophecy, I suspect. I see the girl writes in green crayon on pink paper with a mouse in the corner. The mouse is wearing a dress."
"I ought to point out that she decided to do that so the Hogfather would think she was sweet," said Susan, "including the deliberate bad spelling. But look, why are you—"
"She says she is 5 years old."
"In years, yes. In cynicism, she's about 35. Why are you doing the—"
"But she believes in the Hogfather?"
"She'd believe in anything if there was a dolly in it for her. But you're not going to leave without telling me—" Death hung the stockings back on the mantelpiece.
"Now we must be going. Happy Hog's Watch. Oh, yes. Ho, ho, ho."
"Nice sherry," said Albert, wiping his mouth. Rage overtook Susan's curiosity. It had to travel quite fast. "You've actually been drinking the actual drinks little children leave out for the actual Hogfather?" she said.
"Yeah, why not?"
"He ain't drinking them, not where he's gone."
"And how many have you had, may I ask?"
"Dunno, ain't counted," said Albert happily. 1,800,706, said Death, "and 68,319 pork pies, and one turnip."
"It looked pork pie-shaped," said Albert. "Everything does, after a while."
"Then why haven't you exploded?"
"Dunno. Always had a good digestion."
"To the Hogfather, all pork pies are as one pork pie, except the one like a turnip. Come, Albert, we have trespassed on Susan's time."
"Why are you doing this?" Susan screamed.
"I am sorry I cannot tell you. Forget you saw me. It's not your business."
"Not my business. How can—"
"And now we must be going."
"Nighty-night," said Albert. The clock struck twice for the half hour. It was still 6:30, and they were gone. The sledge hurtled across the sky.
"She'll try to find out what this is all about, you know," said Albert.
"Oh, dear."
"Especially after you told her not to."
"You think so?"
"Yeah," said Albert.
"Dear me, I still have a lot to learn about humans, don't I?"
"Well, I don't know," said Albert.
"Obviously it would be quite wrong to involve a human in all this. That is why, you will recall, I clearly forbade her to take an interest."
"Yeah, you did."
"Besides, it's against the rules."
"You said them little grey buggers had already broken the rules."
"Yes, but I can't just wave a magic wand and make it all better. There must be procedures."
Death stared ahead for a moment and then shrugged.
"And we have so much to do. We have promises to keep."
"Well, the night is young," said Albert, sitting back in the sacks.
"The night is old. The night is always old."
The pigs galloped on. Then,
no, it ain't.
I'm sorry?
The night isn't any older than the day, master. Stands to reason. There must have been a day before anyone knew what the night was.
Yes, but it's more dramatic.
Oh, right then.
Susan stood by the fireplace. It wasn't as though she disliked death. Death, considered as an individual rather than life's final curtain, was someone she couldn't help liking, in a strange kind of way. Even so, the idea of the Grim Reaper filling the Hog's Watch stockings of the world didn't fit well in her head, no matter which way she twisted it. It was like trying to imagine Old Man Trouble as the Tooth Fairy. Oh yes, Old Man Trouble. Now there was a nasty one for you. But honestly, what kind of sick person went around creeping into little children's bedrooms all night? Well, the Hogfather, of course, but there was a little tinkling sound from somewhere near the base of the Hog's Watch tree. The raven backed away from the shards of one of the glittering bulls.
Sorry, it mumbled. Bit of a species reaction there, you know, round, glittering. Sometimes you just got a peck.
That chocolate money belongs to the children.
Squeak,
said the Death of Rats, backing away from the shiny coins.
Why is he doing this?
Squeak.
You don't know either?
Squeak.
Is there some kind of trouble? Did he do something to the real Hogfather?
Squeak.
Why won't he tell me?
Squeak.
Thank you. You've been very helpful. Something ripped behind her. She turned and saw the raven carefully removing a strip of red wrapping paper from a package.
Stop that this minute!
It looked up guiltily.
It's only a little bit, it said. No one's going to miss it.
What do you want it for, anyway?
We're attracted to bright colours, right? Automatic reaction.
That's jackdaws.
Damn, is it?
The Death of Rats nodded.
Squeak. Ah, so suddenly you're Mr. Ornithologist, are you?
Snapped the raven. Susan sat down and held out her hand. The Death of Rats leapt onto it. She could feel its claws like tiny pins. It was just like those scenes where the sweet and pretty heroine sings a little duet with Mr. Bluebird. Well, similar, anyway. In general outline, at least, but with more of a PG rating. Has he gone funny in the head?
Squeak,
the rat shrugged. But it could happen, couldn't it? He's very old, and I suppose he sees a lot of terrible things.
Squeak. All the trouble in the world,
the raven translated. I understood, said Susan. That was a talent, too. She didn't understand what the rat said, she just understood what it meant. There's something wrong, and he won't tell me, said Susan. That made her even more angry. But Albert is in on it, too, she added. She thought. Thousands, millions of years in the same job. Not a nice one. It isn't always cheerful old men passing away at a great age. Sooner or later, it was bound to get anyone down. Someone had to do something. It was like that time when Twyla's grandmother had started telling everyone that she was the Empress of Krull and had stopped wearing clothes. And Susan was bright enough to know that the phrase, someone ought to do something, was not by itself a helpful one. People who used it never added the rider, and that someone is me. But someone ought to do something, and right now the whole pool of someones consisted of her and no one else. Twyla's grandmother had ended up in a nursing home overlooking the sea at Quirm. That sort of option probably didn't apply here. Besides, he'd be unpopular with the other residents. She concentrated. This was the simplest talent of them all. She was amazed that other people couldn't do it. She shut her eyes, placed her hands palm down in front of her at shoulder height, spread her fingers and lowered her hands. When they were halfway down, she heard the clock stop ticking. The last tick was long drawn out, like a death rattle. Time stopped, but duration continued. She'd always wondered when she was small why visits to her grandfather could go on for days, and yet when they got back, the calendar was still plodding along as if they'd never been away. Now she knew the why, although probably no human being would ever really understand the how. Sometimes, somewhere, somehow, the numbers on the clock did not count. Between every rational moment were a billion irrational ones. Somewhere behind the hours there was a place where the Hogfather rode. The Tooth Fairies climbed their ladders, Jack Frost drew his pictures, the Soul Cake Duck laid her chocolate eggs. In the endless spaces between the clumsy seconds, death moved like a witch dancing through raindrops, never getting wet. Humans could live, no, humans couldn't live here, Because even when you diluted a glass of wine with a bath full of water, you might have more liquid, but you still have the same amount of wine. A rubber band was still the same rubber band, no matter how far it was stretched. Humans could exist here, though. It was never too cold, although the air did prickle like winter air on a sunny day. But out of human habit, Susan got her cloak out of the closet.
Squeak! Haven't you got some mice and rats to see to, then?
Nah, it's pretty quiet just before Hogswatch, said the raven, who was trying to fold the red paper between his claws. You get a lot of gerbils and hamsters and that in a few days, mind, when the kids forget to feed them or try to find out what makes them go.
Of course, she'd be leaving the children, but it wasn't as if anything could happen to them. There wasn't any time for it to happen to them in. She hurried down the stairs and let herself out of the front door. Snow hung in the air. It was not a poetic description. It hovered like the stars. When flakes touched Susan, they melted with little electric flashes. There was a lot of traffic in the street, but it was fossilized in time. She walked carefully between it until she reached the entrance to the park. The snow had done what even wizards and the watch couldn't do, which was clean up Ankh Morpork. It hadn't had time to get dirty. In the morning, it had probably looked as though the city had been covered in coffee meringue, but for now, it mounded the bushes and trees in pure white. There was no noise. The curtains of snow shut out the city lights. A few yards into the park, and she might as well be in the country. She stuck her fingers into her mouth and whistled.
"You know, that could have been done with a bit more ceremony," said the raven, who'd perched on a snow-encrusted twig. "Shut up. It's good, though. Better than most women could do. Shut up."
They waited. "Why have you stolen that piece of red paper from a little girl's present?" said Susan.
"I've got plans," said the raven darkly.
They waited again. She wondered what would happen if it didn't work. She wondered if the rat would snigger. It had the most annoying snigger in the world. Then there were the hoofbeats, and the floating snow burst open, and the horse was there. Binky trotted round in a circle and then stood and steamed. He wasn't saddled. Death's horse didn't let you fall. If I get on, Susan thought, it'll all start again. I'll be out of the light and into the world beyond this one. I'll fall off the tightrope. But a voice inside her said, "You want to, though, don't you?" 10 seconds later, there was only the snow. The raven turned to the death of rats.
"Any idea where I can get some string?"
"Squeak."
She was watched. One said,
"Who is she?"
One said,
"Do we remember that death adopted a daughter? The young woman is her daughter."
One said,
"She is human."
One said,
"Mostly."
One said,
"Can she be killed?"
One said,
"Oh, yes."
One said,
"Well, that's all right, then."
One said,
"We don't think we're going to get into trouble over this, do we? All this is not exactly authorized. We don't want questions asked."
One said,
"We have a duty to rid the universe of sloppy thinking."
One said,
"Everyone will be grateful when they find out."
Binky touched down lightly on Death's lawn. Susan didn't bother with the front door but went round the back, which was never locked. There had been changes, one significant change at least. There was a cat flap in the door. She stared at it. After a second or two, a ginger cat came through the flap, gave her an "I'm not hungry and you're not interesting" look, and padded off into the gardens. Susan pushed open the door into the kitchen. Cats of every size and colour covered every surface. Hundreds of eyes swiveled to watch her. It was Mrs. Gammage all over again, she thought. The old woman was a regular in beers for the company, and was quite gaga, and one of the symptoms of those going completely yo-yo was that they broke out in chronic cats. Usually cats who'd mastered every detail of feline existence except the whereabouts of the dirt box. Several of them had their noses in a bowl of cream. Susan had never been able to see the attraction in cats. They were owned by the kind of people who liked puddings. There were actual people in the world whose idea of heaven would be a chocolate cat.
"Push off the lot of you," she said. "I've never known him have pets."
The cats gave her a look to indicate that they were intending to go somewhere else in any case, and strolled off, licking their chops. The bowl slowly filled up again. They were obviously living cats, Only life had colour here. Everything else was created by death. Colour, along with plumbing and music, were arts that escaped the grasp of his genius. She left them in the kitchen and wandered along to the study. There were changes here, too. By the look of it, he'd been trying to learn to play the violin again. He'd never been able to understand why he couldn't play music. The desk was a mess. Books lay open, piled on one another. They were the ones Susan had never learned to read. Some of the characters hovered above the pages, or moved in complicated little patterns as they read you while you read them. Intricate devices had been scattered across the top. They looked vaguely navigational, but on what oceans, and under which stars? Several pages of parchment had been filled up with Death's own handwriting. It was immediately recognisable. No one else Susan had ever met had handwriting with serifs. It looked as though he'd been trying to work something out. Not Klatch, not Hawanderland, not the Empire. Let us say 20 million children at £2 of toys per child equals 17,857 tons, 1,785 tons per hour. Memo, don't forget the sooty footprints. More practice on the ho-ho-ho. Cushion. She put the paper back carefully. Sooner or later, it'd get to you. Death was fascinated by humans, and study was never a one-way thing. A man might spend his life peering at the private life of elementary particles, and then find he either knew who he was, or where he was, but not both. Death had picked up humanity, not the real thing, but something that might pass for it until you examined it closely. The house even imitated human houses. Death had created a bedroom for himself, despite the fact that he never slept. If he really picked things up from humans, had he tried insanity? It was very popular, after all. Perhaps, after all these millennia, he wanted to be nice. She let herself into the room of lifetimers. She'd liked the sound of it when she was a little girl, but now the hiss of sand from millions of hourglasses and the little pings and pops as full ones vanished and new empty ones appeared was not so enjoyable. Now she knew what was going on. Of course, everyone died sooner or later. It just wasn't right to be listening to it happening. She was about to leave when she noticed the open door in a place where she had never seen a door before. It was disguised. A whole section of shelving, complete with its whispering glasses, had swung out. Susan pushed it back and forth with a finger. When it was shut, you'd have to look hard to see the crack. There was a much smaller room on the other side. It was merely the size of, say, a cathedral. And it was lined floor to ceiling with more hourglasses that Susan could just see dimly in the light from the big room. She stepped inside and snapped her fingers. "Light," she commanded. A couple of candles sprang into life. The hourglasses were wrong. The ones in the main room, however metaphorical they might be, were solid-looking things of wood and brass and glass, but these looked as though they were made of highlights and shadows with no real substance at all. She peered at a large one. The name in it was Ofla. The crocodile god, she thought. Well, gods had a life, presumably, but they never actually died, as far as she knew. They just dwindled away to a voice on the wind and a footnote in some textbook on religion. There were other gods lined up. She recognised a few of them. But there were smaller lifetimers on the shelf. When she saw the labels, she nearly burst out laughing. The Tooth Fairy, the Sandman, John Barleycorn, the Soul Cake Duck, the god of... what? She stepped back and something crunched under her feet. There were shards of glass on the floor. She reached down and picked up the biggest. Only a few letters remained of the name, etched into the glass. Hogfa.
Oh, no, it's true. Granddad, what have you done?
When she left, the candles winked out. Darkness sprang back. And in the darkness, among the spilled sand, a faint sizzle and a tiny spark of light.